Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this point. Now I will turn the meeting over to your host, Tracy Dodd. You may begin.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining today's call. I'm Tracy Dodd, Executive Vice President and Chief People Officer. I joined VNSNY a little over a month ago, and I'm really excited to be part of this great organization. In its simplest terms, a chief people officer is the head of HR, so my focus is to develop a people strategy that enables us to attract, recruit, engage, develop, and retain the talent that VNSNY needs now and in the future. I look forward to getting to know you and hearing your thoughts around how we can continue to improve as an organization. I'm hosting today's call on behalf of Andrea Castellanos, who is currently out of the office. And joining me today are several members of the HR team, as well as Dr. Jay Dopkin from VNSNY Choice. This call is an opportunity for unvaccinated staff impacted by the vaccine mandates to ask questions about the COVID vaccine and the mandate itself. If you have a question, please email it now to vaccinemandate@vnsny.org. Again, vaccinemandate@vnsny.org. Some of you may still have questions about the vaccine safety and efficacy, so we'll begin with Dr. Jay Dopkin. Dr. Dopkin is an infectious disease specialist and will now share some insights about the vaccine and possibly the mandates. Dr. Dopkin?
Thank you very much, Tracy. I was asked to speak today about the safety and efficacy of the vaccines. So I want to go back to last December when we first learned the results of the large clinical trials, which led to FDA approval of the COVID vaccines on an emergency basis. Since then, ongoing studies have shown that the safety and effectiveness of all three of the vaccines in use in the United States has held up remarkably well, even as the new, more contagious Delta strain has become the predominant cause of COVID in America. Last month, the FDA granted full authorization to the first of the vaccines to apply for it, the Pfizer-BioNTech product. The other two are likely to receive full approval shortly. Discussion is now focusing on extending use of these vaccines to children and the potential use as boosters for selected populations. Overall, this has been a remarkable success story accomplished in a crisis setting without any shortcuts or departures from the normal approach to approving any medical treatment. For all drugs, therapeutics, and vaccines, there's a standard sequence of evaluations required to establish safety and effectiveness. Initially, laboratory studies are done to look for any evidence of toxicity. Animal models are often used to test for effectiveness, determine dosing, and further exclude toxicity. Only then are human studies allowed, starting with small numbers of volunteers to again determine dosing, exclude toxicity, and begin to determine efficacy. Finally, large so-called phase three trials are done to compare the candidate agent with established treatments, or if none exist, with an inactive substitute or placebo. Vaccines are held to a particularly high standard since they will be given to large numbers of healthy individuals, including children. So any significant rate of side effects or toxicity may render them unacceptable. Long-term monitoring for months or even years is also built into the process to ensure safety. The emergency use authorization of these vaccines has raised considerable concern, which I want to address. The decision by the FDA to allow use of a drug or vaccine before it is fully approved is not at all unusual. It happens when there is an urgent need and FDA is satisfied that safety and effectiveness standards have been met, but there are remaining regulatory requirements. In the case of the COVID vaccines, the requirement was for long-term follow-up out to 1 year post-vaccination to look for any rare adverse events. Fortunately, nothing was found in the case of the Pfizer product, so full approval was issued. The Moderna and Johnson vaccines will likely follow the same route. The release of the COVID vaccines followed careful review by independent experts of three large clinical trials, which enrolled over 100,000 volunteers, half of whom received vaccine and half got placebo injections of salt water. These were double-blind, randomized trials in which only a safety monitoring committee knows who received the vaccine. This is to make sure there is as little bias in the trial as possible. Efficacy was determined by how much the vaccine reduced the frequency of severe symptomatic COVID disease, hospitalization, and death. Both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines showed about 95% effectiveness, a remarkable rate. Adverse events were carefully recorded for all participants. Comparing the frequency of these events between the vaccine and placebo groups helps determine whether they are associated with the vaccine or occurred by coincidence. In the trial, safety data was very similar for the three vaccines. Most reports of adverse events were mild, such as soreness at the injection site and short-term mild fatigue, headache, or fever. Severe allergic reactions were very rare in these controlled trials, with no hospitalizations or deaths attributed to vaccine administration, again, in over 50,000 people who received the vaccine. Other serious adverse events that were potentially vaccine-related, including a clotting disorder called PTS that was seen in several women under 50 after the J&J vaccine, and a mild inflammation of the heart muscle called myocarditis reported in some recipients of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. In both situations, the FDA looked carefully, including pausing the use of the J&J vaccine for 1 week, but determined that in each case there was a clear-cut benefit of the vaccine that far outweighed the risk. For example, it's been shown that the COVID infection itself causes myocarditis at a much higher rate than any vaccine effect. Another important observation is that all COVID vaccines reduce infection by about 75%. This means you're much less likely to get an infection that you can pass on to someone else. Over the last 2 weeks, as news reports have focused on hospitals in low vaccine states that are overflowing with COVID cases, there have been two common observations. 95 to 100% of those hospitalized for COVID were unvaccinated. And according to one intensive care doctor, every COVID patient he had to put on a ventilator expressed regret about refusing the vaccine. The bottom line to all this, the COVID vaccines are safe and effective. They protect your health as well as your family, community, and patients. Thank you, Tris.
Thank you, Dr. Dopkin. So I'm about to share some opening remarks that are relevant and important to all of you, and I think that most of these opening remarks will address the majority of the questions that have been submitted into the mailbox so far, and then we will address the remaining questions after these remarks. So the October 7th New York State vaccine mandate deadline is now only 8 days away. I know that some of you are still deciding whether to get vaccinated or not, and we have been using these weekly calls to share important and relevant information that you can use in making that decision. We also want to make it as easy as possible to get vaccinated should you decide to. So let me start with some few basic facts about the mandate and its impact to you if you decide not to get vaccinated. If you are a Partners in Care home health aide and you are not vaccinated as of October 7th and you did not receive an exemption, then starting on October 8th, you will no longer be assigned to any cases. You will have an additional 2-week grace period where you can still get vaccinated and return to work. If on October 22nd, you are not vaccinated, you will be terminated and your 1199 health insurance and other benefits will end on October 31st. You can choose to purchase COBRA health insurance at that point, but this insurance costs more and you would be paying out of pocket for the full cost of coverage. For VNSNY clinical staff impacted by the mandates, if you are not vaccinated on October 7th and you don't have an exemption, then the following day, on October 8th, you will be placed on an unpaid personal leave of absence for up to 3 months. The governor has stated that if this happens, you will not be eligible for unemployment benefits. Just as with our home health aides, your company-subsidized medical insurance and other VMSNY benefits will end on October 31st. If you get vaccinated between October 7th and January 7th of 2022, you can return to work right away. If, as of January 7th, you are not vaccinated, you will be separated from VNSNY. I realize these are difficult consequences. However, they are mandated by the state for most of the staff on this call. We don't want you to stop working, and we don't want you to lose your benefits. We want to make it easy for you to get vaccinated. So starting tomorrow, there will be a city-run COVID vaccination van parked outside our 220 East 42nd Street office between 2nd and 3rd on 42nd Street. The van will be there all day from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, September 30th, Friday, October 1st, and Saturday, October 2nd. You can walk right in without an appointment and either get your first dose of the Moderna vaccine or the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine. As an added incentive, anyone who gets a first dose there will receive a $100 debit card. It's a convenient option, and a number of employees have shared they plan to visit the van on one of those 3 days. There's also a city-run vaccine clinic right down the street from 220 in Grand Central's Vanderbilt Hall across from Pershing Square Cafe. They're open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., and they're also offering $100 debit cards. A few final reminders. First, you can find links to other vaccination clinics that are in your area by visiting the Vaccinate VNSNY pages on the intranet and on the Partners in Care Resource Center. Also, important to note, if you want to apply for a medical or a religious exemption from the vaccine mandate, you need to do so right away. We're already past the deadline for making sure your application is reviewed in time for the October 7th deadline. So if you do apply for an exemption, please know that you may miss some work while your request is being evaluated. If you need help applying, please contact Ask HR or Partners in Care Health Services, and they will go through the application process with you. And please remember that applying for an exemption does not guarantee that your request will be granted. Each request is being reviewed individually based on legal guidance. So we'll now turn to your questions, and we have a number of colleagues on the line that will help address them. Once again, the email address where you can send questions is vaccinemandate@vnsny.org. Okay, so looking at our inbox, we have a question here that I am going to ask Marion to answer. And let me find that question. Here we go. What is the situation around someone who is recently recovering from COVID-19, including still having some symptoms and having been assessed by their doctor to need testing due to the remaining symptoms, to ensure health is stable enough to receive the vaccine? Will an extension be granted due to the current situation, as this seems to be someone other than the individual and doctor making a decision regarding individual health? Marion, are you still there?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Might be on mute.
Forgot to press that mute button. Good afternoon, everyone. It's Marion Haas from Human Resources. I want to actually ask Angela Courtney, who is on the line with us today, to answer this question as it relates to a medical situation.
Sure.
Angela,
are
you there?
Courtney.
Thanks.
Yes. Hi, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So people with COVID-19 who have symptoms should wait to be vaccinated until they have recovered from their illness and they have met the criteria for discontinuing isolation. Those without symptoms should also wait until they meet the criteria before getting vaccinated. And this guidance also applies to people who get COVID-19 before getting their second dose of the vaccine. If you were treated for COVID-19, with monoclonal antibodies or convalescent plasma, you should wait 90 days before getting the COVID-19 vaccine. So I hope that answers the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. I think that answered it very well. There is a question here about the 2 weeks paid time off after October 7th if you are being placed on the unpaid leave of absence for up to 3 months. Will we still be paid out the 2 weeks of PTO after October 7th and then unpaid leave? The answer is yes. If you have banked up to 2 weeks of PTO, yes, you will be paid out that 2 weeks of PTO. And that will be, I believe that will be after the grace period on October 22nd. So if there's anyone on the line from HR that wants to correct that statement, please do. But my last understanding was the payout would be after the grace period on October 22nd.
Hi, this is John Collins in HR and Benefits. For the people who get paid through Workday, they'll get the 2 weeks of PTO starting as soon as they're placed on the personal leave of absence. So that will start, I think that first day is a Friday, and then they'll receive their PTO. For home health aides, would be paid any PTO after they are terminated.
Thank you, John.
John, it's Marion. Just a clarifying question, perhaps for the audience. October 8th would be the first day that they would be placed on leave. Would their paycheck for that week reflect 1 day of PTO time and 4 days of work time, assuming that they worked those prior 4 days?
Marion, this is John. Correct.
So the payment out of the PTO would follow the normal time frame of our paychecks, if I understand our process correctly.
Correct, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you both. Very helpful. Thank you. Marion, there are a number of questions here related to religious exemptions, you know, timing around that, when they're being submitted, when people can expect to hear back. Would you like to address that one?
Yes, thanks, Tracy, and thank you to all of you who have been so patient on waiting for your answers on the religious exemptions. As you all know, this was a somewhat late-breaking news, and we're watching all of this every day. But this week, we did review almost every single one of the religious exemption requests that have been submitted, and we're committed to getting answers out to everyone in the next few days, certainly before the end of this week. So by the end of this week, Friday of this week, you should expect to have an answer. If you submitted your request through Workday, you will get a notice in your inbox with our reply. And if you if you're a home health aide or an employee using PayPro or Home Health Aid Exchange, you'll receive a reply in the same way that you sent in your question, whether it was an email or a text or a phone call or snail mail. We'll try all ways to get back in touch with you. Again, thanks for your patience as we review these important requests.
Thank you, Marion. I'm seeing a couple of questions that are similar in theme. I'm going to actually ask Nausheen if she wouldn't mind answering these. They're related to non-clinicians who are non-field-facing employees but who are still covered by the mandate, and I think they're looking for an explanation as to why that is.
Sure, and I know that Marion and I spoke about this earlier today, so she can feel free to keep me honest here, but to be clear, the New York State mandate does not apply to only clinicians or to only patient-facing or field-based staff. By and large, that is the largest group of employees that are covered, but in an effort to prevent transmission of COVID-19, the regulation goes further and also applies to staff who may regularly interface with our patient or field-facing staff. So in this example, we have certain managers who oversee clinicians or field-based staff who may, as part of their ordinary responsibilities, go into the field to either perform supervisory visits or otherwise meet with staff who are going into the field. So I'm not familiar with exactly who the requester is, and perhaps, Marian, you have information that might be helpful to that person in particular, but generally the answer is that there may be additional positions that are subject to the mandate based on the interaction with patient or field-facing staff that are contemplated by the mandate as well.
Yeah, I think the other thing I would add to your comments, Nosheen, and which we're spot on for who is covered here, are staff who go into hospitals and nursing homes and other settings where those locations are required under the mandate to have all staff and vendors and other people coming on site to provide services, whether they're clinical or not, be vaccinated. So that's another group, and I know that in that group there are some folks who are not clinicians who are covered by the vaccine mandate. Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you. Very helpful. Thank you both. At this time, I'm not seeing any other questions that we haven't answered unless I've missed any, Marian or others. If you want to keep me honest there, if you feel there's one that I haven't addressed, please feel free to address it now. But if not, I think we're about to wrap up.
I just saw one more come in.
Tracy, there we go.
I can read it if you like.
I think we can address that one offline. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining, and thank you for all of your great questions, and I hope that we were able to answer all of your questions today. Please keep them coming, and we look forward to next week's call. And thanks, everyone, to my partners in HR and legal. Really appreciate your assistance in answering our questions. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.